Howdy. Welcome to Nintendo World Report Connectivity. This is episode 392. I'm your host, Neil Ronahan. Joining me, as always, even if I'm not here, John Raritan.
Howdy, everybody.
So we've got an email to talk about. We've got some Game of the Year lists to talk about just in time for the start of a new year. I don't know. It's the kind of thing where, like, looking at my Game of the Year list, I probably could have just, like, locked it down, like, in November. But I still feel weird about, like, well, like, you know, and actually there was some movement because of a game that I played more of near the end of the year.
Ooh.
But, like, I've kind of just been, like, staring at this list, like, occasionally fiddling with it. You know what? No, I think that game would go higher. Like, that game I've thought about more. But, yeah, we're going to talk about Game of the Year stuff, our games of the years, and then talk a little bit about the future. But let's start with that email. John, do you want to read it?
This is from Chariot Goblin, who says, "Hey, Connectivity, hope you all had a happy holiday. We are now in 2024 and everyone is looking ahead on various gaming calendars. One mysterious game is Princess Peach Showtime. So far, we've seen 3 minutes of footage, and personally, it looks like it'll be just okay in a post-Mario Wonder landscape. Do you think the game will fall short? You could even argue that Metroid Dread set the bar high for side-scrolling 2D Nintendo games. Interested in hearing your thoughts. Thanks, and Happy New Year." Happy New Year, Chariot Goblin.
Happy
Thanks
New
for writing
Year.
In.
I do. I don't think I would have ever compared Princess Peach Showtime to Metroid Dread.
I like the comparison, though, and we're going to roll with it. I guess it goes to show just how little we've seen of Princess Peach Showtime. I don't know that I can totally call it a 2D game.
Why I think it's like the being like, I don't know. It's like Metroid Dread is going to put it to shame. One, Metroid Dread puts most games to shame. It is
right.
An incredible video game.
Yes, it is a 10 out of 10 game. No, Princess Peach Showtime, if I had to, like, once again, we've seen very little of it, but the impression I've got, I would compare it more to, like, Luigi's Mansion. Where it looks like you kind of have these small little diorama spaces. I'm extremely interested in that game. I was telling Neil before we started the show that, like, I was excited for Mario Wonder. I liked Mario Wonder, but I'm more interested in Showtime because it's an entirely new thing. I have no idea what to expect. And I like Nintendo the most when they're doing something that I don't know what it is.
This is Nintendo weird. Like, that's the one thing about it.
Late generation weird Nintendo.
This could be a crappy game. Like, we just don't know. But
or
the one thing
it could
about
be amazing.
It's going to be different. And, like, that's one thing that I definitely could knock on Nintendo for the past several years is that they got very safe.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, like, I want to see them be weird again. And this looks like a weird game.
Yep.
Because really, I mean, look at 2024 so far of what we know. It's like four remakes in this.
Yeah, it's definitely the thing in 2024 that I'm most excited for so far.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong, like, Another Code, like, I've never actually played those games, and I think the demo was very nice, and I will probably play those games. Don't have a lot of interest in Mario vs. Donkey Kong. Luigi's Mansion 2 is great, but, like, I have played that video game before. Paper Mario the Thousand Year Door, it is great to have it on a console that, like, people can more easily access. I have played that game before. Like, excited. We'll play the majority of these games, but they're not new.
Yeah, I am excited for Mario versus Donkey Kong.
There's no
reason to remake that game, but I love it, and, like, I'll play it. Sure. Like, somebody reached into, like, just a bucket with a bunch of Game Boy Advance games on slips of paper and was like, "Oh, Mario versus Donkey Kong. That's what we're doing."
Yeah. No, I mean, it's like they're. And, like, I'll probably still wind up getting Mario vs. Donkey Kong. I think also my kids, I think from the direct that I got revealed, I think my kids were into it. So, like, I'm doomed.
Yeah.
But it's more that, like, I got excited that it was going to be a new game like that. And they were like, it's a remake. I'm like, oh, damn it.
Yeah. I just like that somehow NST has gotten enough sway to be able to do some dumb things. And I'm proud of them.
I mean, they did F-Zero, so.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, is somehow that studio has done F-Zero, and presumably I'm just guessing that they're doing Mario and Donkey Kong.
I don't know. Did it ever get, because.
I don't think it got confirmed, but this isn't, like, A, already an NST game, but, like, B, this is the period of the system where NST would have the freedom to make things.
Yeah.
Like, this is their moment, is everybody else has moved on to Switch 2. And they are running the show. every original game we get from here on out is NST, baby.
Oh, yeah. NST is listed as a developer, at least on Wikipedia, which...
Okay. That might just be assuming from the old one.
Trust. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Do they list a source or anything, or is it just assumed based on the previous...
Yeah, there's version. No source on it, but okay. I mean, I think it might be. I'm not willing to be like, it's definite, but like, it probably is.
Yeah, yeah.
That is the thing with Princess Peach Showtime is, who the fuck is making that game?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
I mean, will it be a Super Mario RPG thing where it's like, we're going to find out that like Art Piazza or Tosei is making this game?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of rumblings online that it's like, it's the 3D Mario team, and I don't think it is. Like, because I don't think there's any reason to think it. Like, I don't think there's any, like, real similarities.
Yeah, I mean, from that point, I don't think there's similarities. It could be the kind of thing, like, NES Remix, for example. I mean, not mm-hmm. that this is a similar game. NES Remix was produced by some of EPD Tokyo people, like, was it Hayashida, I think?
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was developed by Indie Zero, I believe. It was developed by like an external studio. And I feel like Princess Peach Showtime could be the kind of thing where maybe there is some, you know, you look at some of the Nintendo producers and you're like, oh, it is like folks who worked on Galaxy and 3D World and stuff.
Yeah.
And Odyssey. But it's this other company that is doing the main legwork.
Yeah.
Maybe it's NST.
I think we do know from like LinkedIn and stuff that NST is staffing up.
Yeah,
like I'm telling you, man, NST is it's they're coming.
I think I heard some rumblings, and I know the LinkedIn stuff, I know it was out there, but I've heard some rumblings that I think NST is kind of that, like actually getting some chances to do stuff.
I'm so excited
by F-Zero 99. I think they like maybe restructured some of the leadership and stuff. Because there was a while where they were just, some of it is covered the Project Hammer stuff.
Yep.
Where I think there was a lot of frustration and turnover, and it's honestly probably a little similar to Retro, mm-hmm. where they just kind of like had a little bit of a walkabout and are now returning back to be able to do more.
Yeah, I almost wonder if Nintendo kind of has trouble when one of the American studios like runs into an issue and like they're not directly under Nintendo of Japan's purview, so they're not like overseeing their sort of restaffing. And so it just takes longer for them to find their footing again.
I mean, it's also, if you think about just Japanese culture versus American culture, Japanese culture, historically, I think it's changed a lot, over the past couple decades. But like in Japan, usually you're with a company and you're with them for your career. Mm-hmm. You look at a lot of folks at Nintendo, like, oh, you might have Fujibayashi, like he started at Capcom, but now he's been at Nintendo for 20 years. Like you have the person where like maybe they worked at Konami when they got out of college, but then started working at Nintendo where they're 25 and now they're 70.
Yeah, people like Imamura leaving, retiring is kind of odd.
Yep.
Yeah.
Can't wait until his NDA is up.
Oh, it'll be amazing. The things that man will be able to see. I noticed he posted a picture of a toy sitting on his desk the other day, and his wallpaper on his computer is still a picture of Fox McCloud from the anime they did before Star Fox Zero came out, and I'm like, he's just clinging on.
Yeah, he's,
he didn't quite get to live that dream. He sure does want to.
He is a fan like you.
Yeah. But yeah, I think you're probably your guess that there's probably some co-developer. Once again, since this is a late Switch game where all the major devs are probably working on stuff for Switch 2, it makes sense that it would be like, grab a smaller team, like you mentioned, like Tosei or something, like grab a smaller team and bring them in with a, you know, Nintendo producer to supervise. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And I think I even sent an email to Nintendo PR being like, who's making this game?
And they never respond to the same response
email. Like they were with like, no, sometimes they actually did for Mario Strikers. I got a confirmation that it was next level.
That's weird, because we asked like Mario RPG, we asked like the day they announced it, like who's making this, and I don't think
I think it was IGN had some article up about like we asked Nintendo and Nintendo just said like, oh, wait until the game comes out.
Yeah, thanks Nintendo.
I mean, it's all about, I mean, we talk a lot about how like, oh, like Ubisoft is terrible, like they're like, look at these people, Activision treats their employees awfully, and granted Activision not at the same level as Nintendo. Meanwhile, Nintendo's over in Japan being like, we are just a magical entity that produces games. There are not people here. It's Miyamoto. Miyamoto is just in his hamster wheel doing weird shit.
Yep. Which, like, that part is true, but then there are also other people that work there. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Though Activision's fine now because Kodak's gone. He took a lot of money with him, but he's gone.
Everything's fixed.
Yep.
Phil Spencer will bring rainbows.
I mean, as long as he doesn't bring
until they try to unionize.
I was going to say, you know, Microsoft hasn't been the worst when it comes to unionization. I feel like they've recognized a couple.
There was a very funny quote from him when Activision people were trying to unionize, and he's like, I don't know about that. Like, he's still, it is the kind of thing, like, when you're leadership, like, you don't want to do the things that are illegal, but you'd rather not have a union. Like,
yeah, sure.
As long as you don't actively stand in the way, like, it is okay, Phil Spencer, if behind closed doors you're like, goddamn unions, because they make your job harder. I get
they
it.
They do. But also, like, Activision
it's
employees.
Better for the people.
Well, and like, if you're Activision, like, you've just got out of the reign of Bobby Kotick, you've got to just be like, we have to unionize. Yeah. Like, it's like, we've done this once, we have to unionize.
Yeah, we have to have protection.
Yes, rarely has a company more desperately needed a union than Activision. Jesus.
Anyway yeah, Princess Peach Showtime. I'm honestly, like, yeah, I'm excited for that game, if only because it's an unknown. And it's cool, like, I mean, inevitably, we're going to start this game and it's going to be like, Peach is on her period. How can we make her happier? Let's just dress up as dumb shit.
Yep. That's going to be the game. They'll find a way.
Yeah. And then she'll like cry at some point, and then a man will come by and be like, women.
Yep. Nailed it, Nintendo.
I'm going to find out it's made by like a men's rights activist group.
Yes.
J.K. Rowling is a co-writer.
Yes. Wow, she plays Princess Peach.
I didn't realize Peach had such a stance.
Yeah. It's they really wanted to give Princess Peach more of a
You should have noticed when Princess Peach had her book and wrote about the goblins that had hook noses and were money grubbing.
Yeah.
That should have been a red flag for Princess Peach.
Yeah. Well, they wanted to give her more of a character. People were always complaining that she's kind of just, you know, a damsel in distress. They wanted to really establish her as a person with opinions and views. And so they did. And
we'll know if it's a bad year. If March rolls around, Princess Peach Showtime comes out and she's a TERF.
That'd be, you know what? It's funny enough. Let's do it. Do it, Nintendo. Make a weirdly bold, take a weirdly bold stance with Princess Peach. Give her weird opinions. Make her problematic. Like, there's like a random part where she's just like, this would have never happened in Trump's America.
I feel like if that happens, then we lean into it, make a bunch of money off of ads and stuff, and then just close the site and burn it all down.
Yeah.
Because there will come up, if that were to happen, like, there will be a money train for a while, and then Pitchforks will come out and everybody will die.
Yeah. Well, that's when we switch over to being an Xbox site.
Yeah.
We've been looking for the window, so. This is it.
So, game of the year.
Oh, sure.
So we each have, I, of course, as always, have a longer list.
In fairness, technically, I did write mine down in advance this time.
Yeah. It's not you, like, piecing it together.
Because I wrote it down on December 18th, because we were talking about it in Slack, and so I randomly threw it together then instead of now.
So I am going to quickly run through the back half of my list, and then I guess I'll do my 11 through 15 and my 3 port honorable mentions, just kind of list them off. And then we'll kick over to you to do your number 10.
Okay.
All right. So the way I've done it, because I have my Google spreadsheets, I think it's going back to like 2015 or 16 at this point. It is an exercise that I very much enjoy doing. It's always a game that is new to me. I will put in my rankings 3 games that were not new to me, but I thought were incredible, ports and remakes. Super Mario RPG, Kirby's Return to Dream Land Deluxe, and Metroid Prime Remastered. All 3 of those are also in our own NWR site-wide best remakes and remasters. I think they are like 1, 3, and 4 on the list.
Mm-hmm.
And number 2 on that list is actually my 13th ranked game, not to go out of order, is Star Ocean Second Story R, which is a game that is new to me. It highlights my personal rules of game of the year. I've never played Star Ocean. Star Ocean 2 before. Now I have, and it is my 13th favorite game of 2023. Right below that, At 14 is Snakebird Complete. Disclosure, Soren McNulty, friend of the site. She was a producer on that game at Astra Games. Snakebird Complete is an incredible puzzle game. Has a very good hint system. Makes it kind of friendly, but it's just like a very chill game. You are a snakebird, and it's about like maneuvering them on a grid-like field, and you're trying to maneuver the snakebird or snake birds into a goal area. Very fun. Number 15 for me is F-Zero 99. I think it would probably be higher if it like had me gripped for like a week or two. I did actually, I booted it up. I think I booted it up like shortly after our Game of the Year discussion, which you can listen to on Patreon if you haven't already. And like, I was like, oh yeah, this is really good. But like, it's still, it's my 15th favorite game of the year. It's more, not a knock on F-Zero 99, just more the packed year that we had. Number 12, Disney Illusion Island. Probably the best Metroidvania that came out in 2023, in my opinion.
Better than Metroid Prime Remastered? Does that count?
2D Metroidvania?
There you go.
That's a fair comment, and I was only thinking 2D. Number 11 for me, which I think is probably on your list somewhere, Xenoblade Chronicles 3 Future Redeemed.
Yeah.
I think that game fumbles the bag, or at least that DLC fumbles the bag a little bit in the back half. I mean, it's kind of funny that much like Xenoblade 1, I feel like you get to Prison Island and you're like, okay, this is lagging a bit. But still extremely good. I adore that game. It was my like first or second ranked game of the year in 2022. Extremely good DLC. They can make a new Xenoblade soon, right? Doesn't take that long.
I think we're due for a remaster of X first.
X. But let's go.
Yeah. Make it happen.
All right. What's your number 10?
My number 10 is a port, but it's a Switch port of Remnant from the Ashes, which we were talking about this beforehand, and Neil revealed that he has no idea what Remnant is.
I don't.
So it's kind of a Souls-like, but it's a third-person shooter, so it's a ranged Souls-like. But one of the cool things it does is, like, one of the common thing in that style of game is you die, you lose everything, and you go back to a checkpoint. You have to, like, get back to where you were to get your experience points back and all that. Remnant doesn't do that. It has the checkpoints, it has all the leveling up and everything, but when you die, you just go back to the checkpoint. You don't have to go get your stuff back. And I find that it has the result of allowing me to just explore without there being quite as much consequence. And then the other cool thing it does is, because of the way that the story and the world is set up, every kind of zone of the game, rather than like, you know, Dark Souls, where you'll go through different areas, but they're all kind of a worn down medieval castle, every zone in Remnant is like a different genre of story of universe. So like, you might be in one area that's like, you know, a weird swamp, and then the next area you're on Tatooine and it's like space stuff, and then the next area is a castle. And so like, the game kind of, every time you like finish a boss, you like go into the next area and it's like a totally visually different game. The dungeons do some cool like procedural stuff. You can do it online or single player. Both work really well. And it's the guys that do it's Gunfire Games, who are a bunch of the old Darksiders devs. So they just
one
have
of the two
that
studios that
they're the guys that did Darksiders 3.
And
they've just got a vibe that I really enjoy how they do their games. And the Switch port specifically is like incredible. Like it is a very good port. I posted screenshots back when it first came out and I was trying it from handheld mode. And the handheld mode in Remnant on Switch looks better than the docked mode in a lot of Switch ports. it is a very well done port and a great, great game.
When's Darksiders 3 coming to Switch?
It's already on Switch,
Neil. I forgot it did come to Switch.
I reviewed it.
Yeah. It was like 3 years later. That's why it was a... Well, I guess more appropriately, I don't think Zach Miller listens to the show. We need to do our Darksiders game club at some point.
Yes.
It'll be, it, I mean, you and Zach will do it with bells on. And I think I have, you know why I was like, why hasn't that come to Switch? It is the only Darksiders game I don't own on Switch.
I will say, of all the Darksiders games, it is the one where I would say, like, it's fine on Switch, but buy it on Xbox or PlayStation.
Yeah. Probably if we do the game club, I'll probably just wind up picking it up on PlayStation or something.
Yeah, the first two are enhanced ports of 360 games, so they're fine on Switch, but the third one is a bit more demanding.
Genesis is extremely up my alley. I've played it for like 20 minutes. I've always intended to play more.
Yeah, that is a good Switch port. It's prettier on everything else, but it is a very good Switch port.
But
give me your number 10, because I will never find the developer of
this game. Mine is, I feel like in order to make my list complete, I need to have some kind of Picross game on it. So it's Tencent Trees, a game that completely took me by surprise with how good it is. Legitimately, there was a fabled time where sometimes you could go on the Switch and look at the coming soon section and it wouldn't just be marauded by complete bullshit and bundles of nonsense games, AAA clocks and hentai games. I mean, it still was a lot like that back in the beginning of 2023, but that was how I just poked through the coming soon and saw Tencent Trees, and I'm like, this looks like a Picross game. Got a review code and played it and was completely blown away. I think in some respects, it might be one of the best Picross-like games I've ever played.
Wow.
The whole concept of it is that, like, you have, it's the same like nonogram stuff where you have like the numbers that say like, oh, there's this many things in this row. But what it is that there are trees dotted throughout the landscape, and you need to put tents in a way that, like, they are like the blocks that you're placing to line up with the numbers and the different rows and columns. But there's also rules in that, like, they can't, like, if you put down a tent, another tent cannot touch it, you know, in any direction, diagonally, orthogonally, and everything. Absolutely, like, devious design. Has a good hint system. You can like save mid puzzle and like experiment with stuff and then restore where you were at it. And there is a truckload of content in the game. It is, I adore it. It's amazing. I still play it.
Cool.
What's your number nine?
My number nine is, I guess, another kind of Souls like Jedi Survivor.
That is number one on my game from 2023. I wish I had time to play.
It's I own it.
I own it now.
Yeah, no, these Jedi Fallen Order Survivor games, they're good. I think they benefit from leaning really hard into kind of like the Metroid side of the Dark Souls formula.
Yeah, that's definitely why Fallen Order was appealing to me, even if it was just more the bugs was what kind of soured me on Fallen Order.
It was rough. And that was, I think, Survivor kind of struggled a little bit just because at launch, like, the console versions were great, but the PC version was horrible.
Yeah.
And so everybody kind of just assumed that all the versions were horrible, and it hurt its launch a bit. But at least I haven't played the PS5 version, but at least the Series X version has been great, and seems to generally be regarded as very good. So, yeah, and it's honestly one of the first games that I played on Series X where I felt like, okay, this isn't just an enhanced version of an Xbox One game. Like, this feels like something that wouldn't run on the last gen. Now they're putting it on the last gen, so we'll see how that goes. But it was just a very visually impressive, still fun gameplay. My one kind of bash against it, and the reason it's not higher, is they kind of like half did, it's not open world, but they just made all the areas really, really big, and don't always really have a reason for them to be big. I think I kind of like the more tightly confined constructed areas of the first game.
Yeah.
But overall, still a really, really solid game.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to playing it. A game higher on my list is the reason why I haven't gotten to it yet.
Sure. What's your nine?
Theater Rhythm Final Bar Line.
That makes sense.
Yeah, extremely good. It's a game that I think, like, in another year would probably be way higher. It's a very good theater rhythm game. I think it's one of those things where it's like, I put so much time into it on 3DS across both the releases that getting to this, it's kind of like, okay, yeah, no, it's more of that. It's very good. It's another thing that I return to every now and then. And it has just a, like, the DLC is very good. They pull from pretty much almost any like Japanese Square Enix property that you could think of.
That is
active in some respects.
Even then.
Yeah.
The list of songs in that game is pretty stupid.
Yeah. I mean, I got my Chrono songs. You got some Nier songs in that. I know. I think Live Alive has so that there's some representation there. Just a really great game. Beating the drum for theater rhythm as a concept to spread out to more than just Final Fantasy. Across companies. Give me a theater rhythm Mega Man, a theater rhythm Zelda.
Yep. Wasn't there, it's still Square theater Enix,
rhythm,
but
theater rhythm Dragon Quest, and it sucked.
I was going to say, wasn't there some Xenogears music in the new one?
I think there is.
I think there was. I was going to say that. Theater rhythm like, Xenoblade. It's already working its way towards Xenoblade.
Yeah. Yeah.
That'd be great.
I imported Theater Rhythm Dragon Quest on the Japanese. It was a 3DS game that only came out in Japan. And after playing it, Square made the right call. It's more that it's like, think about Dragon Quest music. Think about it's like, hey, we have music from every Dragon Quest game. They're all kind of the same.
Right.
Like, the difference between the Dragon Quest 1 main theme and the Dragon Quest 2 main theme? I don't know.
Do they have them on there as separate songs?
Yes, I do recall. It's been a very long time since I played that game. But I remember, like, I'm glad I got to play it. I do, I like me some Dragon Quest. It's still, like, it's not completely terrible or anything. It's still theater rhythm. It's just that, like, I realized, I'm like, oh, like, there's not a lot of variety. And I think that's why Final Fantasy works really well, is that even if you do have, you know, there's a lot of Yamatsu music throughout it, but like each game has a very different vibe at times. And especially once you get into more of the later 3D ones, that even if it's games that I don't like the music is almost always interesting.
Yeah. So that's Dragon Quest is another great example of you separating art from artist.
You're becoming evil. The composer is terrible, but he's also dead.
That's true. That helps.
Yeah.
It helps when the bad man is dead, so he can't possibly make money off you anymore.
Yeah, his family might, but maybe the family didn't like him.
They might be okay. I don't know what they think.
I'm not gonna judge one way or the other. I'll until proven otherwise.
That's true. Maybe it's time for me to play more Dragon Quest. Maybe. My number 8 is Pikmin 4, which is also NWR's Game of the Year.
It is higher on my list. I guess I'll say that out. Pikmin 4 is my number 3.
Okay. I liked a lot of games this year.
Pikmin 3, highest Nintendo made game for me.
Ooh. In any other year, this would have a real good shot at being my number 1. I think they did an incredible job of, after making the best Pikmin game in Pikmin 3, they were like, well, that's pretty much the best we can do with that exact formula. How can we kind of just start over? And they did. And they made Pikmin 2 not suck, which is an achievement. Yeah. And just kind of, I wouldn't say totally reinvented it, because there's still plenty of Pikmin, but just made a lot of really smart, really impactful changes that make it feel like a very different game.
And I think OG's great. Inclusion just,
yeah,
like, it's a very good addition. It does change a lot of, like, what made that original game what it was.
Yeah,
and it is like, I guess they kind of do it in the post game, although I should go back and finish up that post game stuff that they have. But like, there's a part of me that like, give me a full on remake of Pikmin 1 with the modern, not even just like the gameplay is fine. It just like, make it so like throwing Pikmin is easier to do, and their AI is better, which they kind of include that in Pikmin 4. It's an incredible game, and I do just, everything about it is very good. I do struggle in that I think Pikmin 3 might be the better game, but it is not that far off.
The nice thing is, I feel like with the first three, I sort of do feel like I have to choose a favorite, because they are very much trying to do kind of the same things. With Pikmin 4, I feel like it can almost sort of just exist on its own. Like, I don't feel compelled to decide whether I like 3 or 4 better, because they feel just very different to me. Are you at the 7? Or are you on 8?
No, I'm at 8. I'm at 8.
Okay.
My number 8 is Sea of Stars.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Very good RPG. The writing is bad. I think I'm at a point where I think I'll just say that. But I think the combat is extremely good. Super Mario RPG-esque, Mario and Luigi-esque gameplay. The visuals are incredible. The soundtrack is very good. I like the flow of everything. I like exploring that world. This would be a lot higher on my list if I didn't think that the game did not completely fumble the bag with like the last couple hours. I think the ending of this game for me is, this was a game that as I was playing it, I was like, I could finish this game and start a new playthrough right away. And I think that's something that Jordan even said to me after he finished it. He's like, I just want to start it again. And I got to the end of that game and I was like, I don't know if I want to play this game again. That's how much the ending did not sit well with me. But it's a super fun game. And I did really enjoy my time with it, even if I don't think I'm going to play through it again. But yeah, Sea of Stars, probably the most muted I might be on my eighth favorite game of the year. Because it's just more like, this is a game, it won Best Indie Game at the Game Awards. It is a game that has a lot of plaudits, and I do there are parts of this game that are like my favorite things in video games. Mm-hmm. And then there's just parts of it where I'm like, oh, that was bad. And that's why it's 8. I feel like it's on a similar, not the exact same thing. It's like how I feel about the Pokemon games nowadays, where like Pokemon Scarlet and Violet are janky ass broken games. I also put in like 20 hours into that new DLC. And I had a very good time doing it.
Yeah. Well, they have that thing of they're very good game design hidden behind a lot of horrible choices.
My favorite thing that I came across in Pokemon Scarlet and Violet in the DLC is that, so they have the thing where you can like send the Pokemon out to do auto battling.
Mm-hmm.
I would do that for a while, and then my Pokemon would just like, I would throw it out and it would just be like static, not moving, but it would like follow me around the map and it wouldn't do auto battling. And the only way I could get out of that is by like flying somewhere else, and then it would fix itself.
Did you watch Willem's video review for the DLC?
No, I have not.
He has some, I don't know if you encountered any of the frame rate stuff that he did, but holy crap. He found some frame rate things that might be some of the lowest frame rates I have seen in a Nintendo published game since the Super FX chip. And even I think the Super FX chip would win.
It is not great. But I think Scarlet and Violet, especially that second DLC, are incredible. It is a shame that they run like absolute poop.
I want to love them. They're, from a game design standpoint, they are doing all of the right things. From a technical standpoint, they are making games I find unplayable.
Yep.
And that's all sad. Right.
Number 7 for you.
Number 7. This is Metroid Prime Remastered, which you already mentioned earlier. But it is like, somehow I think that honestly, this game holds up pretty well against stuff that I am playing on like Series X. Like it's, and I think it's just because of the incredibly smart design of the GameCube original, where they made these compact little zones that would load in that were super detailed. And because Retro has kept just using the same engine for all these years and just upgrading it, they were able to load in that GameCube game. It's already very well optimized for that engine. And they just wound up with an incredible amount of headroom. And so they are pumping out visuals in this game that I think are some of the best visuals the Switch has ever put out, at 60 frames per second, at a locked resolution, no dynamic res. Like, this is just, as a technical graphics nerd, this is, Metroid Prime Remastered is an achievement. I expect Metroid Prime 4 to look much worse than this. Because this is kind of, it's kind of only a thing you can do when you have the headroom granted to you by the fact that you are working with something that could run on the GameCube. If you were making a game for Switch, you wouldn't design it this way. Maybe you should. But yeah, it's just this perfect alignment of events and engine technology that just make, I think, the best looking Switch game that exists. Also, it's Metroid Prime, so it's really fucking good.
Yeah, it is. Like, there's definitely parts of that game that drag a little bit. Like, the artifact hunt at the end still bugs me, and you do, like, go through Magmore Caverns so many goddamn times.
Sure.
But when that game hits, oh, Lord. Like, There are stretches of that game that are just like delightful dessert gameplay.
Well, I think the updated controls, even more so than when they were on the Wii, I think the updated controls make it so that just moving through the world is faster and smoother and less clunky. And so even just re-traversing things is easier. I found more of the artifacts on accident because I didn't have to stop and hold a button to look around. I was just always looking around. So it just, it plays better. Yeah, it's great.
Cool. My number 7, Super Mario Brothers Wonder.
That makes sense.
I had an absolute blast playing through the main part of this game. I think the post game is disappointing, but it's still extremely inventive and creative during the main game. You can feel the impact of a 3D Mario producer working on this game because it feels like a lot of the shorter levels and challenges, which are very Super Mario Brothers 3-esque at times, are also very reminiscent of some of the goofy stuff in 3D recent 3D Mario games, like an Odyssey or a 3D World.
Yeah.
Really great game. If you join Patreon and you can hear me talk more shit about this game. My thing with this is that like I feel like I played through it and I had a good time and I'm just done with it. And
yeah,
you know, it is a single player game and everything, but like, well, I think about it. Yeah, I mean, technically, so I did not care for the multiplayer at all.
Yeah.
But like, I'm looking at this list of games that I have. Pikmin 4 is primarily a single player game. That game has been on my mind a lot this year. Xenoblade 3, just in general, and Future Redeemed itself, a game that has also been on my mind a lot this year. Those are all single player games. Like, that's why, like, some of that, it's like, this game, it's my 7th favorite game in a stacked year. I still like it a lot, but there is something that, like, as I was playing this game, I'm like, top 3, no doubt. And then I finished it, and a couple weeks went by, and I'm like, oh no, it's lower. Like, when I talked about tinkering with this list, like, I think Wonder was at one point sitting at 3, and I just slowly looked at this and being like, eh, now bump it down 1.
Yeah.
And Sea of Stars have wound up in the post-game has not been kind to either game.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, spoilers, but I realized once you said that I did not put Wonder in my top 10.
Because you're not thinking about it.
Yep. Well, and I mean, I think even when I am thinking about it, I look at everything else on here and go, yeah, it's probably, you know, it'd probably be in the top 15. But
yeah, it's still really good. And it's still the best 2D Mario in 30 years.
Yep. It'll definitely go down in history as a game that I really wish I had reviewed lower. Like, it's
so new Super Mario Brothers U.
Yes, I do think it's better than new Super Mario Bros. U.
I do too.
Like, ask me in a couple years, but I feel very confident about that. Since we did our game club and I had all of those games fresh in my mind, I feel very confident that it's better than any of the new Super Mario Bros. Games. Just moving Mario feels better.
All right, what's your number 6?
My number 6 is a game that I don't think is going to be on your top 10, but it's Hi-Fi Rush. I absolutely loved this game. It was a great surprise because this was just like a shadow drop out of nowhere. And it's just, it is a type of game. And I kind of feel like even if you don't like this game, I'm not saying this specifically to you, but just to everybody. No, yeah,
I legitimately did not click with this game at all, but I respect the hell out of it.
Yeah, it's the kind of game that doesn't get made anymore, especially outside of Nintendo. So like kudos to Xbox for like allowing this game to happen, because I don't feel like there are many big I'm trying to imagine if the shoe were on the other foot, if this was like PlayStation, if PlayStation owned Bethesda and their studio that was known for making horror games came to you and said, we want to make a rhythm brawler, it's got comic book graphics, like, I don't know that I have a hard time believing they would greenlight it. I mean, I have a hard time believing that Xbox did. So, yeah, I'm glad this game exists. I think it's really fun. It is maybe one of the most like artistically appealing games of the year for me. And it's got a great soundtrack. Even if you play on the streamer mode where it has all the like non-copyrighted music, it's still a great soundtrack. And I highly recommend it. If you have Game Pass, it's on there. If not, it's fairly inexpensive, and I think it's on Steam too. So play this game. It's great.
Cool. All right, what's my number six? Super Mega Baseball 4.
There it is.
That is a game.
Waiting for it.
This 6-7-8 run is games that were higher that dropped. The only reason why Super Mega Baseball 4 dropped is it kind of runs like shit on Switch.
Did you play it on the other systems? Like, do you have it on?
I have thought about it because I did for a lot of games on my list. I like booted it up for a little bit to be like, oh yeah, no, this rocks. And I was like, I had like this awesome game. I put it on a higher difficulty because I hadn't played in a while. It was like a challenge. It was like a tense game. I was winning like 3-2 in the eighth inning, and then it crashed.
Oh.
And I was like, yeah, I'm going to drop this down a spot or two on my
list. That's a bummer.
It is still, I mean, like much like every Super Mega Baseball game, I think I gave 2 a 10, and I think 3 and 4, I gave like a 9 or a 9.5 to both of them.
Yeah.
I definitely believe that each game is better than the last. It's just that 2 was the revelation. Like 1 was very good, 2 was when they just made it whole. And 4 adding like it's real players but like historical ones.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Babe Ruth up until like, you know, some player like Jose Bautista who played like a few years ago. Very good spread. It is basically like dudes listing off a bunch of sports players the game. Had so much fun, like find Dave Rigetti, putting him on my team, just good stuff. I adore this game, and I think it's very smartly made. Metalhead Software is just a bunch of brilliant people that know how to make the best sports games in the world. I swear to God, if EA ruins them, I've basically spent like the past 10 plus years of my life like lightly defending EA, because I think that they do put out good games, as evidenced by Super Mega Baseball 4. But if they ruin my darling boys at Metalhead Software, I will go on a warpath. They are precious, and they need to just be allowed to continue to make goofy sports games for the rest of my life.
Hopefully the Switch 2 will be up to running Super Mega Baseball 5.
I mean, if not, like, I'll just buy it on PS5. Like,
sure. But you'll still have to review the Switch version indefinitely.
Oh, yes.
So, like,
oh,
you're
definitely.
Still, this is this is your personal, this is your purgatory. This was a game that
when Super Mega Baseball 2 was not on Switch initially. When it got announced, I knew the PR person who was handling it and sent them a message being like, bro, hook me up. Like, it is basically Super Mega Baseball and Tony Hawk games are the only things that I do that for.
Yeah.
Where I just like shoot a line to a PR rep and I'm like, come on. I mean, these games are amazing.
Oh, that's what I did for Biomutant on Switch, but then it never showed up. So,
oh no,
it just sort of disappear. They took that countdown off their website.
Yeah. I was kind of looking forward to it. I think it's on like the PlayStation Game Club thing. Like, well, so I think I might have access to it.
It's still coming. The Switch or the physical version has a release date in February now. So like maybe then, but we'll see. THQ is fun. My number 5 is Remnant 2. Because the port of the first game and the new game both came out in the same year, so it was a Remnant-filled year. It's like the first game, but with a 2 after it, and it has different levels. and now it has sort of like a class system for your characters, which the first one didn't. And you can have a class where you have a dog companion who helps you beat up bad guys. And also, he will revive you if you die. And it's great, and you can pet the dog, and so the second one I think does a better job of being a single player game in addition to a multiplayer. As someone who plays these single player, I think the second one does a better job of balancing for single player by giving you kind of like an AI companion right off the bat, which you can sort of get in the first one, but the second one feels more geared towards it. And it's bigger, feels more ambitious. Everything these guys make, I love. So keep making games, Gunfire. You've got a vibe, and I love it. What's your 5?
My number 5, late riser, Spider-Man 2 on PlayStation 5. Turns out that game's fucking incredible. I'm getting deeper into it now. I'm not finished yet, but it does a lot of things, and I might cheat a little bit and mention what my number four is, because I think the two games are very similar to me. Mm-hmm. My number four is Tears of the Kingdom.
That's also on my list, but not at number four.
Okay. but yeah, Spider-Man 2 and Tears of the Kingdom are both just like the perfect type of open world game for me. Mm-hmm. It is fun to move around, either as Spider-Man or as Link. It's fun to mess around in that world. I think in that there is more to mess around with in Zelda than there is Spider-Man, as my son found out when he got frustrated that you cannot go into buildings or tunnels. Whereas I think with Zelda it does a lot better of like, oh, like you can go anywhere, man. Mm-hmm. It looks incredible on PS5. The story missions are extremely inventive. Like this is pretty early. I mean, I had not heard about it when I went into the game. So I guess if you're very nervous about like first couple hours spoilers of Spider-Man 2, like skip ahead a minute. There's like you find Black Cat, and Black Cat has like a wizard wand, and it makes portals. So there is a segment where you are chasing Black Cat, and like you're chasing it down the streets of New York City, going into these portals, and oftentimes like there's like a stretch where like you're in like icy mountains because mm-hmm. you went through one of those portals, and it's just like it's awesome. It is so cool, and pretty much every story mission, main story mission that I've gone into has been extremely inventive and fun and different than what you encounter elsewhere in the game. And then they have all the side stuff that fun to just bomb around the city and complete them. And a lot of them have very strong writing. This is a game that completely understands the characters of Spider-Man, of both Peter Parker and Miles Morales. And I mean, honestly, this is the best Spider-Man movie I think I've ever seen outside. I think Spider-Verse might still take the cake. But as far as like, you know, Tom Holland, Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield, like, no, like freaky Yuri Lowenthal is probably the best Peter Parker I've ever seen on screen. and like, I mean, I still because I was a little lukewarm on the original Sony's Marvel's Spider-Man. Not that I thought it was fine. I didn't get quite as into it, but I played through Miles Morales when I got my PS5 last summer, and like that was awesome. And I think some of it is that at this point, largely because of Spider-Verse, the Miles Morales character is just extremely fun and unique and interesting, and having the juxtaposition of both of them is very fun. Also, a game that knows when to like slow things down. Like you have a moment early on where it's just like Peter Parker and Harry Osborn reconnecting, like they were childhood friends, and like you're just going on a bike ride, and it's stuff like that that like it just makes it feel like I feel like I'm playing a comic book. It's awesome.
Cool. Yeah, your Portal comment made me think that I appreciate Sony's dedication to really hammering home that this thing has an SSD in it. Like, we need you to understand, we put an SSD in the system, it loads fast. Like, that, it's crucial that you know this. Put portals in all of the games. Which is cool. Not bashing it, I just think it's funny. My number four, and a game that could use a little bit less loading, is Starfield. Which is a game that, like, I look at it and I go, man, there's a lot of flaws in this game. It feels very old. I do think it looks nice, but it feels very old. It has a lot of very old game design, which I think is a problem of just when your game is in development for a very long time. But at the same time, the things that it's using as its reference for its game design is all stuff that I love. Like it's very much an old Wing Commander Free Space-esque space sim of, you know, shooting down spaceships and landing on planets and trading with people and, you know, making supply runs and all that kind of like space simmy ass space sim stuff. Starfield revels in that. So it lands very specifically with me. I kind of think back to before this game came out, I think we talked about On Connectivity, where I said, like, I wonder how this will resonate with people who like aren't as into these kind of old school space sims. And I think we're seeing the reaction is that it's mixed. But for me, this game just lands. It is fantastic. I feel like I can kind of just play it indefinitely. And that's the other thing I'll highlight without going into spoilers in case people haven't seen things. But like, New Game Plus on this game is very New Game Plus. So it does feel like a game that you can, rather than like on the old days of like Fallout 3 or Skyrim where you save at the character creator, this is a game where like, no, finish the game, you roll credits, and then you start again on that same save file because it's worth it. And yeah, fantastic game. Not going to be for everybody, but if you are the audience for this, then it's going to hit real good.
It is installed on my Xbox.
One of these
someday
days.
Someday I will play it. Yep.
Yep. With Halo you'll Infinite. You'll hate it.
Probably. No. Yeah. I mean, it's also, I mean, like with Skyrim, like Skyrim's a game that I don't think I love quite as much as other people, but it's just very fun. And yeah. I do kind of expect that I'll have a similar thing with Starfield where like, almost like Elden Ring as well, where I'm like, oh no, this is great. It's not totally for me, but I'm still having a good time.
Yeah, that's totally valid.
All right, my number four, kind of talked about it or mentioned it, Tears of the Kingdom. Mm-hmm. It's funny because like when people are like, oh, it's a remake of Breath of the Wild, like you're not wrong. No. I just don't give a shit.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of where I'm at with this game is that like I love Breath of the Wild and they just gave me that but better.
Yeah.
And I made the comment when we did the 3D Zelda Game Club and I was like, I do wonder after Tears of the Kingdom, will I ever want to replay Breath of the Wild? And I think the answer is no. I think Tears of the Kingdom does a lot of things better than in Breath of the Wild. I think it's like filled with variety in a way that Breath of the Wild is still incredible. It just, this expands on it so much. Mm-hmm. The tools that you're given to mess around and create stuff are like so much fun. And even if I'm not making like the Death Star shit that people are making, it's still fun to just like mess around and do stuff. Like it just, this kind of became a sandbox game for me as I had put it down without finishing it because I think the story sucks. Running trend, I love a lot of games that have bad stories. What does this say about me? But I am in no rush to actually finish this game because I'll pick it up every now and then and just get lost in the world for a while, explore the depths, find some shrines, do some side quests. And I have having a great time with it still. I will beat it before the next 3D Zelda game comes out. I think I've got a good 5 years. So
you'll probably beat it before the movie comes out.
Yeah,
this was my number three. So yeah, I'll just tack on that. Like even I kind of agree with everything you said. I do think that the story, while I don't think it's as good as it could be, when it hits, it hits. And I do think I think it ends very strong. I won't say, you know, how, because you didn't finish yet.
I know,
but I think
I know
it ends very,
it.
Very
like,
strong.
It's one of those things where part of the reason why I didn't rush to get there is because I did hear some things about the end. And I'm like, okay, like, it's not like totally spoiled for me, but I know enough that I'm like, all right, like, I won't be hurt if someone mentions something about it.
Yeah.
I have heard that, like, the ending is very strong. It's just a lot of the stuff with Zelda and Roru really... Like I was just like, oh, this is bad.
I do like some of the stuff with Zelda that other people do not. I think Raru and the entire Zonai are wasted in that game.
Yes,
you know,
and it's also
really
the sages. The
way.
Sages, like, yeah, the modern sages that you meet, like they're great. Mm-hmm. But it's they have those like every dungeon has the same. Here is,
yes,
a character model with a mask on it.
Yes.
Telling you that I did this thing, I'm gonna show you the same cutscene. Like, what the?
It's the same script. Like, all you would have to do, and it's like I know that I could approach any of these four things in any order. So just have four different versions, and then no matter which order I do it in, just play the next one. Like, it's have you never played another non-linear open world game?
Probably
like,
not.
It's amazing that like they're at the forefront on some things, and then there's other things where it's just like that. Like, I mean, Starfield, which is a very dated open world game in many ways, the characters still know when I've already done something. Like, if I go and talk to a character when I've already done something else, like they go, "Oh, you've done this, okay." Like, it doesn't just play the same scene four times, but it's also incredible.
Yeah.
So like it, yeah. I'm very
it is, and like
on this
all
game.
The all the dumb like just so much dumb stuff that you can do. Like a lot of like the boss fights that you come across are like, I mean, like both like the I guess like the open world boss fights and the boss battles themselves, mm-hmm. largely all great. I like the cube men. Like I find myself like being like, oh, that's a cube man I already beat. I want to go beat him again because these fights are fun.
I love the depths so much.
Yeah.
I wish the game was more about that.
And like, I wish there was a, I forget, I think it came up during our Game of the Year conversation where it's like, once you kind of realize the trick at the depths, it's a lot of repetition.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like, you know, I can't speak for people, but I've had conversations about Tears of the Kingdom is that I think it has benefited me greatly by not binging this game. Or at least binging this game to complete. I definitely, when it first came out, I played a lot of this game very quickly. But, like, I was of the mindset with the depths where it's, like, kind of like, all right, like, I found a couple light routes. I'm going to go do something else. I'm not, like, going through everything. And now when I'm picking it up, I'm like, oh, you know what? I haven't been to the depths in, like, a month or two. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go spend some time there. And then I'll just get, like, 5 light routes and be like, that felt great. I'll put this game down and I'll come back to it in a month and get some more light routes. It's awesome.
Right. Well, I think that that's true of Breath of the Wild as well. I think it's true of most open world games where like, and we talked about this a little bit during our Game of the Year discussions, where like these games very intentionally give you more than you need. With the idea that part of giving you the feeling of choice and freedom is that you have more to do than you actually are going to do. So like for me, where I was like, yeah, I love going into the depths. I love exploring this thing. Like, I did just binge the depths, and I had a great time, found some really cool stuff. There's some cool lore down there. And, like, that's where I wanted to be. But, like, I barely touched the sky. Like, I'm just now going back to it and being like, okay, I guess we'll do some of the sky stuff. Like, so it's as opposed to trying to 100% it, just like, what interests you? Go do that. And then when it stops interesting you, go do something else.
And it's also with the skies, people kind of rag on that. Like, oh, there's not that much. There was definitely some marketing misdirection in which they were like, look at the sky. Because
they didn't want you to know about the depths.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's still marketing misdirection. I'm not meaning that as a bad thing. Like, is the skies populated and full of stuff to do as the ground and the depths? No. But there's a lot of cool stuff to do with the sky.
Yeah.
It's really fun to, like, figure out how to get places.
How can I get just a little bit higher? Yeah.
Like, honestly, like, I've done all three of the labyrinth, like, Lomai Labyrinth, and I've done all three of those, and, like, those are incredible, because you, like, spoilers if you haven't done them, but there is a sky version, there is a ground version, there is a depths version, and you have quests that will take you to all three, and it's really cool. You have that moment when you do the sky version, and it opens up a thing that you can go into the depths, and it's just like, all right, let's jump. And it's awesome. Like,
And even
I do have the special thing with this game too. And that, like, when I played it most recently, it was actually like my wife started playing it. I was like, oh, I'll play it too. And I'm playing handheld. She's playing on the TV. And like, we did not realize it, but like, I heard her be like, oh yeah, I'm stuck here. I'm like, oh, that's where I am. And like, just really fun moments with that. So I definitely have a little bit of a bias towards like the way that I've experienced this game as a thing that my wife and I are both playing and swapping stories about. But even still, it rules. Like, this game's incredible. It's like, I came to the conclusion that Breath of the Wild was my favorite Zelda game at the end of the 3D Game Club. If I'm never going to replay Breath of the Wild because Tears of the Kingdom surpasses it, I wonder what my favorite Zelda game is.
I could see, and I think I said this before, I could see playing Breath of the Wild again to replay Tears of the Kingdom. Like, I could see playing them both back to back again, because I think they feed into each other really well.
Oh, definitely.
Which I think is cool. But yeah, I'm excited to see what they'll do in the next game, which I believe they've already said will not be the same version of Hyrule and stuff.
But it won't be linear, and everybody got mad.
Yep. Yeah. Heaven forbid that Aonuma continue to be allowed to make what he wants to make, when everything he has made for the past decade has been incredible.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that was also my number three. So what was your number three?
My number three was Pikmin 4.
Okay.
So what's your number two?
My number two is Xenoblade 3 Future Redeemed. Which you talked about a little bit, but I'll just say that my wife and I have played through the entire Xenoblade series together since the first one. We finished Xenoblade 3 and she hated. Like I didn't like the ending. She hated the end.
That last chapter is bad.
And we finished Future Redeemed, credits rolled, and she kind of just went like, okay, I am now all right with replaying Xenoblade 3. Like, it's like, okay, it fixed it. Cool, we're good. So, yeah, no, Future Redeemed had the biggest Xenoblade moment, and anyone who's played all the way through Xenoblade knows what the Xenoblade moment is. Future Redeemed had my favorite Xenoblade moment since the first Xenoblade, where the screen faded up, and I saw something, and just, like, hit the home button, and just kind of sat there for a second, just going, huh, okay, and then went back in. It is a heck of a game. I wish Future Redeemed got its own physical release. I would have liked to have that alongside Torna, but it did not.
Yeah, so my number two, I think it's your number one. It's Baldur's Gate 3.
It sure is.
Baldur's Gate 3 is amazing.
It's so good. I've bought it twice.
I joked about how I might buy it three times in the next couple of years. Because I think I will inevitably buy it on PC. I already have it on PS5. And I was talking to somebody and they mentioned, like, Baldur's Gate 3 should probably be on Switch 2. And I'm like,
oh,
it probably will be. And I will absolutely buy it again.
100%. If it's on Switch 2, I will buy it again.
Nintendo should be talking to Larian right now about, like, yeah, we're launch title. Let's
have
go.
Have it at launch. Well, and they already have. I mean, if from what we know of the Switch 2, seems kind of comparable to Steam Deck power-wise. Already has a Steam Deck verified status, runs reasonably well, totally passably on Steam Deck. Yeah, if it doesn't have split screen, fine, that's okay. Just make it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... everybody should play Baldur's Gate 3, even if you don't think you like Baldur's Gate 3.
I did. Just play Baldur's Gate 3. I might have to, I'll send this into the Slack. Here, you can look at, this is what I did last night in Baldur's Gate 3.
Nice. would you like to describe that for the audience?
I'll do the alt text for this. It is my weird tiefling bard man wearing a floppy wizard hat and a red cape and nothing else. It was slightly accidental. It was because I bought a new piece of armor and I sold my old one. So I came out of it and I was completely naked because I'm not wearing underwear anymore. Why? Who would do that?
No, commando.
And then I ran around and OK Soda is, you might have been able to see this live, although I believe Scott has. He can't see penises in his mode because he's streaming it.
Really missing out.
But he was talking to a shopkeeper and I was like, I'm going to frame this picture perfectly. So it looks like his like halfling is right in front of Shulk the Bard's dick.
Which is kind of what every multiplayer game of Baldur's Gate eventually devolves into.
Yeah.
Is just everybody getting nude and posing for funny pictures.
Yeah, and I feel like it's hard to talk about Baldur's Gate without getting into like hardcore spoiler territory, just because like so much of the fun is the discovery. But I'm just like, as a multiplayer game, I'm having so much fun.
Yeah, I will also say it's great single player too. So like, no matter what kind of social situation you're in, you should try Baldur's Gate.
I think we're near the end of Act Two. We're about to storm Moonrise Towers.
Mm-hmm.
Like we've hit the point of no return in Act Two, I believe. When I finish this multiplayer campaign, I will probably in more earnest start a single player campaign. I do have a Dark Urge playthrough that is very early in Act One, but it's like I can't just have all the games that I play be Baldur's Gate. I need to have some variety.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I'm very slowly working through it in split screen with my wife since the Xbox version came out.
How does this, is the split screen good? Because I've been heard questionable things.
I mean, it runs fine. I think obviously you have less screen real estate. It's kind of the only issue. But I haven't had as much problems with that in this as I did in Divinity. Just because, like, in this, you can bring the camera down to just a traditional third-person view.
And
I feel like when you're looking forward, having that smaller view doesn't really affect you as much as when you're doing a top-down thing. Like in Divinity, when you were pretty much always totally top-down, cutting your screen in half really hurt you. Whereas I think this just kind of naturally handles it better. The only real awkwardness is like, since you're both on the same set of speakers, if you both talk to somebody at the same time, then only one of them will get audio and the other one will just get the subtitles.
Okay.
But usually it's just the case that since, especially in the early part, since I've already been through it, like, I just let her kind of lead and she gets into the conversations and then I just hit the listen button and it goes full screen. And so it's been fine.
Cool. My number one game of the year, Cocoon.
That makes sense. I forgot that that was a game.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out what your number one would be.
It is an incredible, smartly designed puzzle game. I think it went up in our game of the year video. I think this was, what was his fourth for the site-wide game of the year?
I think, yes. Yeah, fourth.
And the thing that I said about that, here's the... Cocoon is a concentrated blast of brilliance where you control a little big fella who has to carry around different balls that house worlds inside of them. That's actually what I wrote. You can go watch that video. But the one thing about Cocoon that stood out to me almost immediately is the way that it's designed is that it doesn't necessarily give you hints, but it just kind of very smartly like funnels you into like everything you need for this puzzle will be accessible. So it'll like cut you off of a certain area, like very, very slyly, like make it so that way, like this is the only area that you can be in. Your tools will be here. Figure it out. And it does it without words. Just absolutely incredible. I adore that game. I've played through it twice and I've started it a third time.
Yeah. Well, it's nice and short, right?
Like yeah. It's like, long. It's like 4 hours long.
Yeah. We need more games like that.
Incredible. I love that game.
Yeah. It was I will highlight how, like, obviously there was some crossover there towards the end, but there honestly wasn't that many duplicates between our lists.
Nope.
Which just goes to show that we can both have a list of 10 and have very few duplicates. Really points out what an incredible year for releases 2023 was. And now all of those people have been fired. So that's good.
Nobody has jobs anymore.
That's fine. Unionize everybody.
Yeah, and then we're in 2024 now. I think there will likely be a video kind of on this topic coming to Nintendo World Report TV on YouTube soon. But last year I wrote a script and then John cut it to a video of the fact that like at the beginning of 2023, we only knew about 5 games from Nintendo. I forget exactly what they were, but the last one that we had dated out was Zelda in May, and then Pikmin 4 was sometime in 2023. We wound up having a lot more games. Super Mario Wonder, a WarioWare, Super Mario RPG, everybody's 1-2 Switch, you know, everybody's favorite game. And we're looking at a similar thing with 2024, where we only know about 5 games. 4 of them are remakes or ports. One of them is Princess Peach Showtime. We talked about these games earlier in this episode. But beyond that, like, there's going to be more stuff. Nintendo has followed a pretty consistent pattern. It's tweaked every now and then. But like we'll have a Nintendo Direct sometime in the first couple months of the year. We're going to find out about some more games that are coming out, both from Nintendo and third parties. We're at the end of the console cycle, so it's probably not going to be anything as exciting as it was in 2023 or before then. But more stuff's going to come out. And at some point, this is probably the year where we hear about the new console.
Yeah.
I went and like kind of did some digging into... like what was the announcement for Switch, and we found out about this. We knew about the system in existence because really only because Nintendo was announcing that they were doing mobile gaming, and with that announcement they wanted to clarify that they weren't getting out of console games. So we found out about the NX in what, 2015, I think,
vaguely. Yeah, we knew that they were making a new system. Like, yeah, we didn't know right what now, it was
right now. I don't think Nintendo said it officially. We know they're making a new system. Like, right. It's also just like, that's the way shit works. We don't know a code name or anything, but we only knew the code name because of mobile gaming. So that is not something that is being replicated. Nintendo's barely making mobile games anymore. But the Switch was revealed. We got the name. We got the concept. October 2016. That was less than 5 months away from the system's launch. So, like, I mean, we got the official rollout of launch date and details 2 months before. That's something that Nintendo has consistently done with systems since the Wii. Probably even before then. I just think that there's a pretty big difference between... I mean, the Wii was one of the first consoles that was an Iwata-produced system. There's definitely a difference between how Iwata did stuff and Yamauchi did stuff. But if there's a new console, it could be out this year, could be out next year. I think I kind of put together like a couple, like, you know what, John, let me know, what one do you think is most likely? Nintendo formally announces the console in June, and then we follow that up with exact release date and details in September, and it comes out in November. We could also see the new console not getting a reveal until October, making it so that way January 2025, we get the launch date confirmation, and then it comes out in March 2025. Or maybe we hear about the console formally in April, and then sometime over the summer, we get details about the launch lineup and the launch date, and then it comes out in September or October.
I think that my gut says that they want to replicate the Switch. Like, the Switch was lightning in a bottle. They're not sure exactly why. And so my gut says they want to do everything exactly like they did with the Switch. So I think we get this thing announced in October, big reveal in January, and then it comes out in March. I think they do the exact schedule of the Switch.
I could see that happening. I think the one thing is they basically just punt on a holiday season.
They do, but I will say what benefited them for Switch is that by doing kind of, it's almost like a soft launch. Like,
yeah,
you release it in March and you run out, and by the time you get to the holidays, you've had time to restock. You get two, yeah, Christmases, you get two launch days.
Yeah.
And that worked really well for them on Switch. And I've also, granted, different situations, but I would also assume that they saw Xbox and Sony really struggle with November releases for Series and PS5. So they may want to avoid that as well. But what I want them to release it this year. Like, that's what I want, but I don't know if that's what they'll do.
I mean, I feel like the safest bet is November or March.
Yeah,
I do. And it's part of the reason why I tossed it out there in the soon to be released video. I think September or October is more reflective of how the industry is right now. Like, you think about this past holiday for Nintendo. What were their biggest holiday games? A game that came out in May and a game that came out in October.
Mm-hmm.
It is completely different from what we traditionally know consoles and games to be, where it's that weekend before Black Friday when Super Mario RPG came out. Like, that was the important thing. But that doesn't happen anymore. Super Mario RPG, love that game. It was not a marquee release in the same way that Mario Wonder or Tears of the Kingdom was. So I do think, like, I mean, like, and even you look at October releases, or even like it used to be like everything came out late October and November for marquee game, your Assassin's Creed's, your you know, Battlefields, your Call of Duties.
Yeah.
Now most of those come out in October.
Yeah.
And like Pokemon is one of the few franchises that like dogmatically still comes out in November. And I actually, if you know what, thinking about them punting on a holiday season, they could announce the sucker in October. There's probably a new Pokemon game coming out in November. So,
yeah. Though they have I was just imagining the Pokemon company trying to develop a cross-platform Pokemon game. yeah, that wouldn't be good. Here, it could be their window to skip a year for Pokemon, saying that, hey, this thing's not coming out till March, but there's going to be a Pokemon game at launch. Which has also had the benefit of, we get an extra 6 months on Pokemon, everybody. Like, which I think would benefit those games hugely.
Yeah. Pokemon is a game that comes out. I think you looked at it. I think it came up in the Discord at some point recently. There's been like a mainline Pokemon release come out. I mean, 3DS, Ultra Sun, Ultra Moon came out, I think, 2017. Black and White, I think, came out when the 3DS launched. I think Black 2, White 2 came out like a year or two later.
They almost always, especially now that, so they've essentially replaced the third version with the DLC. So
yeah,
you get a new mainline Pokemon game every 2 years on average now, with a sizable DLC made by that same team in the middle. And then somehow we're getting we got Arceus. I don't know how that happened. and then you have Ilka doing the Diamond and Pearl remakes over the course of, I think we did the math and it was like at best a year of development. Like that was our generous estimate, but like I think the realistic estimate based on like what their release schedule was like 9 months.
Yeah.
And I do think, like, you know, obviously Scarlet and Violet sold insane numbers. But I do think that the perception of them has probably had a negative effect on the series going forward. Like,
yeah,
because I have to remind people that like you can sell a turd once because people don't know it's a turd. Like Pokemon Scarlet and Violet selling very well doesn't necessarily mean anything for how much people are willing to put up with. It's how well does the next one sell? That's really a question.
I mean, it is like looking at this, the last time there was a year without a mainline Pokemon release was 2015.
Yep.
And I guess mainline being like, you know, a new gen or a remake or something.
I think when these were Game Boy games, DS games, that was still demanding, but somewhat realistic. Now, these are massive HD. Open world HD JRPGs. Like the scale of Scarlet and Violet is like, that's a Scarlet and Violet should have taken 5 years.
That's
a realistic development time. Yes. Two at best, with at least half the team working on Arceus for a good chunk of that.
Yeah.
Like, Pokemon as we have it right now is not realistic. Those games need to be in development for 5 years, maybe four. But like, I think 5 years
is
a realistic number.
It's not happening.
Nope. No, it's not. I'd take 3 years. Like I'd take what I can get. I think they need to branch out and staff up and create entirely independent studios. Because right now they do have like satellite teams, but if you look at the credits for those games, they're like 50% the same people on all of them.
Yeah.
And then a small team that like starts on pre-production. They need to get to the point where they have teams that can make a Pokemon game from pre-production to finished product without any interference from the other teams. That's the only way they can keep up this schedule. They need to get to like at least three of those teams. Otherwise, this is eventually going to crash and burn. Like it's a matter of time. On that cheery note,
I think Scarlet and Violet's DLC is very good.
Sure it is. I think its game design is great.
Yeah.
Maybe the Switch 2 will be able to run Scarlet and Violet if it's backwards compatible. That'll be fun. I can finally finish them.
All right. I think that'll do it for this episode of Connectivity. I'm Neil. That's been John. You can email us, listener mail at connectivity@nintendoreport.com. Thank you for listening, and we'll probably see you next week. I'm not making any promises.
Bye. Bye. This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.